What up, what up, what up? It's Full Court Press. We had a long layoff. We saw a lot of action, but we are back in the saddle, baby. Here to talk a lot of hoops. On my left, as always, Mr. Matt Hayes.
Good afternoon, everybody.
And on my right, a one and only Josh Lewinberg.
Well, hello.
So, gentlemen, we did have a little bit of time away.
I miss this place.
Had a little bit of a break, 2 weeks off, probably at the most important time of the year, mind you.
Yeah, bad time to take some time off.
Has anything been happening? I don't know.
I don't think too much has happened.
This was a good 2 weeks to miss. It's not like we've missed any basketball or anything.
No, I think we missed UFC 129. We didn't cover that.
Thank God for that.
Yeah, that was, although Mark Komnik was, that was a pretty cool fight, you got to admit.
I didn't see it, but I went to a bar in downtown Toronto that evening, and then I ended up at a Chinese restaurant, and I was sitting at a table directly next to the Steven Seagal.
Above the law.
The night of the fight.
Wow, that's terrific.
I saw that picture. Looked like fun.
That was one of the best movies, don't you think?
What did he get?
I don't know.
He must have been with Leo.
You think I was paying attention to what he was eating?
Yeah.
I would have just said, I'll have what he's having. It's got to be paying off.
Does he still rock the ponytail? Is that still full force with him?
His hair looked fake. It looked like it was like glued on. It looked like felt a little bit.
Plastered.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's nice. So other than, I guess, to maybe Mr. Seagal next week if he tunes into the show and sues us, I guess we have some apologies for this week, some layoff. And as always, Matty Hayes, how about you? Let's kick off some apologies. What do you have to be sorry for, buddy?
Well, I'm going to apologize to two people. One, Mr. Giannis Bunkus beside me, and as a result of that, I'm actually apologizing to Zach Randolph, whom Giannis was really high on going into the playoffs. I was moderately high on, but I doubted his ability, and he has come through time and time again for Memphis. Unfortunately, they're eliminated, but Zach Randolph, my hat is off to you. You put on quite the show and shown that you still have it. Sorry, Zach Randolph.
Over to you, Josh. Anything this week?
At the very least, Matt, you're not the only one who has to apologize to Zach Randolph. I'm not going to do it myself because I don't know him anything. But
of course not.
I think the rest of the basketball community probably has a little apology for Zach as well.
That's
but I have to apologize to our listeners. We were gone for, what,
two weeks.
2 weeks? That's a long time. And like the absentee fathers that we are, just leaving, just getting up and heading out and abandoning our listeners. I'm sorry for that.
During the most important time of the year.
Exactly.
When they needed us most.
Yes.
We're sorry.
We're very sorry.
But aside from that, I'm not sorry for shit.
Yeah,
of course not.
I'm going to take a little page out of the Josh Lewinberg book this week and say I am also not sorry for shit. And in fact, I would like some apologies from all the haters that doubted my pick before I left this booth, which was, if you recall, Memphis in six games. And you can go back and you can check that record. But yeah, I picked one of only, what is it, 3 8-seeds beating a 1-seed, 4 8-seeds beating a 1-seed in NBA history. And your boy in the booth picked it out right here. And I took a lot of flack for that pick. And now Memphis is the beauty pick of the playoffs that everybody fell in love with. So everybody, you owe me an apology.
Too bad you can't pick an NCAA champ.
Too bad. Or an NBA champ either, actually. I had a Lakers-Celtics rematch.
Yeah, the Lakers going
regardless of that. All right, so playoffs, though, even though we don't have...
Playoffs?
We got 4 new teams in the playoffs this year. It's a little exciting. Don't have any of the old guard. There was very much a changing of the guard during these NBA playoffs. We saw the likes of the Celtics go down, the Spurs go down, the Lakers go down, and now we're left with this new generation of the new Heat team, the Oklahoma City Thunder, Derrick Rose's Chicago Bulls, and, of course, Mark Cuban's
Dallas Mavericks team.
I like it. I like the parity.
I like the parity a lot as well. It reflects well for the league. I think that you can make a case that the league has never been more popular and never been had such a great advantage point where you have these superstars that are playing terrific in the most important time of the year. Games are exciting. Upsets are happening. I think the NBA has established itself as one of the more entertaining leagues in the world right now. I think there was a little period of time where it struggled a little bit, but now we've seen a superstar. It's incredible right now. These are the best playoffs I can remember since 1996.
Absolutely. The first round was a little weak as expected, but
Memphis?
The first round was weak.
The Chris Paul display?
The first round was weak.
I disagree.
There was a couple series in the West that were exciting.
There were some good series and bad ones.
Yeah, but the East, we knew the bottom half of the East was going to be a bit weak. It's ironic because going into this season, obviously the story was the big three in Miami, and the idea of competitive balance was one that was being talked about at length going into the season, at the beginning of the season. But who would have predicted in a so-called era where everyone's kind of all over teams like Miami for stocking up talent and being this supposed super team that can't be beaten, where we have now four teams that were certainly not at this position last year, and I guess people could have predicted Miami in
this
spot.
One of them is Miami, I was going to say.
One of them is Miami,
and they look the best.
But at the same time, where are the Lakers? Where are the Spurs? Where are all these other teams, Boston, that people had pegged in these spots here in the Western and Eastern Conference Finals? So the parity is showing in the NBA right now. Yes, Miami is there, but as we're going to talk about, this won't be a cakewalk for them.
Well, let's stay with Miami. Let's start out east. Let's break down these playoffs. You look at these teams right now, Miami, Chicago. I think where you have their major advantages over teams like Boston was in the past you've seen Boston have depth and be able to go deep into the bench and have some youth to kind of support those aging veterans. Or even if the guys coming off the bench were older, they were being used in selected minutes, so you weren't putting too much wear and tear on them. I thought the Celtics this year, after they missed the gamble with the Perkins trade, relying on Shaq to come in and play minutes and then him not being able to, and then a banged up Jermaine O'Neal coming in, I just felt they had no bench depth, and that was their main asset to beating the Heat this year. That was their big thing all throughout the year, was that, well, Boston will have depth, and that's why you saw the change. And then when it comes to Orlando, I think you've got a bit of LeBron James syndrome, in the sense that
you've got
a player kind of quitting on his team while with that team because of the lack of talent that's around him. Yeah,
you think he quit?
I think he quit a little bit, yeah.
Well, I don't think he quit when he was getting 20 rebounds a game.
No, he was doing everything
he could. He was being given those opportunities, though. He's being literally given those chances. Atlanta let him do whatever he wanted to do.
Yeah, but that's not quitting.
How do you say he quit when he's putting up 30 and 20?
No, because I think he could have put up more than that. I think that let's put it this way.
You want him to put up more?
No, let's put it this way, because this was an interesting point that Bill Simmons brought up. Again, we reference the guy all the time, but he's one of the best in the business. And that had Atlanta tried to do that to 2001 Shaquille O'Neal, do you think that the result would have been the same?
Dwight Howard is not 2001 Shaquille O'Neal.
But should he not be? Because he's the most physically dominant guy in the NBA.
Listen. I'm going to be clear in my stance here, because going into that series, when I said that Orlando would have some trouble if not lose in the first round, I've been saying for quite some time that Dwight Howard lacks certain leadership qualities that he's going to need going forward if he's going to be that superstar player that everyone has him pegged as, and that he can and probably is. But he didn't quit. He did everything that the Atlanta defense allowed him to do, which, as you said, was quite a bit. They stopped everyone else. But at the same time, he has a certain immaturity that he's going to have to address, especially if come 2 years from now he ends up in L.A. or anywhere else.
Every big man's going to have to eventually defer to a guard.
But he defers all the time. He does not want the shot. Most superstars want the goddamn ball.
Well,
he does not have any interest in it down the crunch.
Well, he doesn't.
He doesn't. He does not want the basketball. He does not want to shoot.
We've talked about this time and time again. You don't really want your big man to have the ball in that clutch time anyways, because he can't shoot free throws.
But if he could, and if he could finish, and if he couldn't be stopped, and you had to literally foul your guys out of the game. Listen, they were playing Atlanta. Atlanta had Zaza Pachulia and Al Horford up front. If you wanted to, fine, go to the line, miss those free throws. But you know what? It's going to cost you your only two big men.
I still don't think that you throwing this all on Dwight Howard is just so...
I'm not throwing it all on Dwight Howard.
Pretty much.
Why are we talking about Dwight Howard?
Yeah, we want to stick with the Heat. We ended up on Dwight Howard. We stayed in the same, I guess, state.
We'll segue back, because depth was an issue in that series. Atlanta just had more talent than Orlando. Dwight Howard had more talent than anyone on either team.
Other than maybe Jamal Crawford.
I don't know if we should or could debate that, but
we're not going Washington Huskies again.
Atlanta is a very deep team, and we saw that. But Chicago is showing that as well, and that's something that, as you said, Boston didn't have. So Boston couldn't give Miami the challenge that people, I think, thought that they could going into the season. And that's something that you need against a team like Miami, because you're not going to have three players on your roster that are better than Miami's best three players. The only way you can beat this team is by limiting the damage that those three can cause while kind of attacking them with depth,
If you can keep those three guys to somewhere around 70 points a night, you should win most of those games, because their depth is terrible.
They have nothing.
They don't even use some of the guys on their bench, and when they do get used, it's... Like, you look at Joel Anthony, he's played great, but they only ask him to
really
rebound
great.
And block shots. They don't ask him to do anything
else. Looks like
a
Neanderthal, but he's fantastic.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
They're just... they had a plan, obviously, going into the season. That plan was criticized by most depth-wise anyways. But the structure that they put in place going into this season, it hasn't come to fruition. Mike Miller has never been the player that they envisioned.
Well, he was hurt for a while.
That's true.
Still is. He's got some weird thumb thing.
Udonis Haslem is just getting back, and it's obviously unreasonable to expect him to be what we know that he can be and what he has been for them in the past. Mike Bibby and Mario Chalmers, there's only so much that you can expect from those guys, one due to lack of experience and the other due to
too much experience,
I guess. James Jones, is that the key for this team?
The key lies for Miami is the opposite of what you just said, which is not allowing their big three to get limited. It's a horrible, horrible, horrible cliche, but it's your best players need to be your best players. And for Miami in this series, this has never been so true. And I think the same kind of strategy applies for Chicago in the sense that the one area where they really are able to exploit Miami is that Miami has not been able to show this year that they can handle a penetrating point guard very well.
Yeah, and they got the best in the game
right now. Slashing
and
a scoring point guard. They had a ton of difficulty with Chris Paul. They had a ton of difficulty with Deron Williams.
With a one-arm Rondo.
One-arm Rondo. Well, yeah, even he wasn't contained as well as he could have been.
He was still getting to the rim with one arm.
So I think that's where the Bulls really have to take advantage is through Derrick Rose. Derrick Rose needs to absolutely dominate, and on the flip side, it's the same with Miami. This is a series of stars. I know Chicago has the depth, and I know guys like Taj Gibson and Kyle Korver are going to have to step up in key minutes in order for Chicago to be competitive in the series. But for Miami, yeah, there's been nothing.
They made their bed at the very start of the season. They had to line it. They knew they weren't going to have depth from the get-go when they did this whole big three thing. They knew they weren't going to have depth.
But so why?
I don't think that's true. Miller thing was supposed to be a steal.
Yeah, but they knew they weren't going to have the depth of other teams. They may have some depth, but when you sign those big three guys, you know you aren't going to have the same depth as some other teams aren't going to have in the long run.
But you shouldn't know that. That's the thing, and that's on Pat Riley because what Boston proved. And listen, Boston today does not have as good of a big three as Miami. We found that out,
of course,
the hard way, just based solely on their age. But when Boston Big Three was put together, we had the same questions about their depth. Who are these guys that's surrounding them? Are they going to be able to win this team or help this team win a championship? And look at what Danny Ainge surrounded that team with.
He definitely did a better job.
Exactly. Rondo obviously became part of this big four. You had Kendrick Perkins who filled a void there like no one else could. And then you have all these young guys like Big Baby that stepped in, that played their role. But that team was put together brilliantly.
Yeah, they were.
Like
you said, signing those veterans that worked out for them, like PJ.
PJ Brown?
PJ Brown. I wanted to call him PJ Stock.
It's not easy. Believe me, it's not easy if you're spending most of your cap on three guys, but Danny Ainge proved that it's possible.
Yeah.
You have to be savvy, and you have to be...
And injuries, again, we talked about it. Injuries hurt Miami,
absolutely,
too. They lost Mike Miller for pretty much the whole season. He was never really effective. And
would Mike Miller be the difference here right now, though?
No, but he would have. Sure, it would have helped the depth.
Absolutely.
And same with Udonis Haslem. That's two big injuries to guys who are supposed to play a good chunk of minutes off your bench.
The Heat really need to stick with the drive and kick, right? That's the only kind of place where your bench and your depth shows any promise. And I know, we said these guys aren't the greatest, but the James Joneses and the Mike Millers and the Eddie Houses.
Oh, for sure. Mike
they can
Miller,
come in and knock down open shots.
That's all they should be doing. Mike Miller and James Jones should be in opposite corners, 45, and just slide.
But once those guys start missing their open makes, then you're in really, really big trouble.
Oh, yeah.
Because then you start, and I think this is an important series for Chris Bosh. He really needs, he's going to be.
He came through in game one.
He did come through in game one.
The only one who did. 30 points, 12 for 18 shooting. He didn't look outmatched in the paint. And let's be fair here, because game one was an absolute beatdown, at least in the second half for Chicago. Yeah. It was an absolute
beatdown.
First half
was very even.
But Miami is so far from out of this series. This is going to be a series. And for me, sitting here analyzing this, there's nothing better. This series is a gift from God, basically.
Yeah,
you have Derrick Rose, the youngest MVP of all time, who back 6, 7, 8 months ago, whatever it is, basically said in no specific terms, apparently, I don't want to play with LeBron James. This is my team. It's my show. I'm going to lead us to the championship. We don't need LeBron James.
He did, however, want to play with one Dwayne Wade.
Yes, yes. But that's all part of the storyline. That's all what makes this fantastic.
Yeah, this
Dwayne Wade from Chicago. You have Derrick Rose, the superstar who wanted not to share the spotlight with LeBron James, going up against the two-time
My
MVP.
My favorite is that Miami chose Chris Bosh over Carlos Boozer. I didn't know that until yesterday. I had no idea that Carlos Boozer's first choice was Miami. It makes sense.
And that's a fantastic matchup. You got two amazing defensive teams. You have Mike Miller versus Kyle Korver, which just doesn't get any better as far as... I'm not serious.
Yeah.
What a series,
Kyle
though.
Korver. Kyle Korver is insulted that you put Mike Miller in the same room as him after this year, after one guy sat out the entire year and complained about his thumbs while the other guy led fourth quarter of shooters and three-pointers.
Isn't Kyle Korver replacing Charlie Sheen on Two and a Half Men?
He's either that or he's becoming the new Kelso on the new That 70s Show. He's going to do one of the
There's
two.
There's a new That 70s Show?
Or a Butterfly Effect 3, I think he's in the works for. Because I think there was a Butterfly Effect 2, it just wasn't with Kutcher. I'm pretty sure.
He has a lot of roles.
Out. Check that out.
That Kyle Korver.
Who's
busy.
Hiring him? Who's this guy's agent?
That's true. Just again, though, gift from God, Bulls, Heat. Who do you got, Josh?
Bulls and seven.
Bulls and seven. Who do you got, Maddie?
I want the Bulls to win. I think the Heat will. I'll say Heat and six.
Yeah, see, I've actually got the Bulls in five.
Really?
Five.
I think Miami has been the
Put
best
Put some money
team.
Down on that.
You think Taj Gibson set the tone? Taj
Five
Gibson.
Or six. Here's my...
That Taj Gibson dunk.
Which one?
The one at the end of the game.
Are you
the
kidding? On Dwayne Wade.
No, see, you just said different dunks, both of you. One said the putback, one said the Dwayne Wade.
Oh, the
dunk.
Putback. The putback at the end of the game. Damn.
Oh, that was a
damn.
Over Dwayne Wade.
No. He had two dunks. He hammered one on D. Wade, and then he had a crazy putback like that Derek Williams dunk.
Okay.
Yeah, so he had two.
I thought the dunk was just unanimously the Dwayne Wade dunk, because Dwayne Wade never gets dunked on, and he dunked on Dwayne Wade.
Big time.
Saw the putback, too. I just didn't think that's what you refer to as the dunk.
Well, I was referring to the D-Wade dunk. But.
Okay, so we got a little bit of confusion. Taj Gibson is just beasting so much that we don't know what dunk. He's like Blake Griffin. You don't know what dunk you're talking about.
You go back to depth. There it is.
He's just Taj Gibson, another guy who...
All right, so I think we have a pretty good idea that this series is going to be a tight one. You're saying five games.
My only thing is I think that Miami's peaked. I think when you saw LeBron James hit... And I thought when the Heat did that, acted as though they'd won the NBA Finals when they beat the Celtics, I think that was the true... I know every team says, you know, oh, this wasn't the goal, but really, I think for Miami, it was proving Boston wrong. Boston had absolutely decimated them throughout the regular season. I don't know if they took a game from Miami, if Miami took a game from Boston. They certainly have not won in Boston. Boston was much better throughout the year. I think we can agree on that. And a lot of people looked at Boston and were like, this is the team with depth. This is how you win a championship. You need role players. And Miami came in, and they put that rumor to bed. They were just like, no, you don't. You just need two uber-talented guys that can absolutely crush your team.
Well,
and that's what they did.
When your all-star point guard dislocates his elbow,
it also helps.
You have nobody inside.
There's a lot of things that Boston did at fault, but ultimately you give the credit to the team that won, not the team that lost it.
Yep.
And Miami won that series, no
Agreed.
Doubt. They won it handedly. They beat Boston into the ground. It wasn't – when you could even tell in that game five when Kevin Garnett was trying to will the Celtics into a victory that they just weren't going to have the longevity to
they
take
just ran
that
out of gas.
It did, exactly. And LeBron James all of a sudden has developed this jump shot that looks way, way better than
and
it did in his past.
I like that you finally saw some killer instinct from Miami. Like, you saw those guys really want to go out there and smash
started,
on Boston.
All the things got proved wrong with Dwayne Wade struggling in Boston. He can't play in Boston. What does he do? He destroys, decimates Boston. LeBron James's jump shot is inconsistent. LeBron James shows up, shoots a jumper very consistently. Like, they can't beat Boston. They don't have the depth. They crushed all those things. I don't think that... I just don't see how they can get up the same way for the Chicago series. I don't see it there.
We see it a lot in sports where certain accomplishments are celebrated maybe more than they should be.
And this was that case.
Absolutely. And you wonder if, like you said, there might be some sort of a letdown now. And these teams are the polar opposite, because you have one team in quotation marks that great players, LeBron James, Dwayne Wade, Chris Bosh to a lesser extent.
Asterisks.
Much.
Asterisks. But then you have a complete team in Chicago, and I don't know that there has been a better put together team at this point.
They have great chemistry.
They really do.
Since maybe...
On both ends.
Maybe the Pistons. You go back to the Pistons and
That's
that team that won the title.
Two.
That won two titles. And you can throw the Lakers of the last couple of years in there as well as being a very all-around team. But with a point guard like Derrick Rose playing the way that he is right now, if Boozer can play better, because he needs to play better than what he has been, Noah's been fantastic as far as what he's able to do defensively. Luol Deng was great in game one.
He's got to be one of the more underrated players in the NBA, Luol Deng.
Absolutely. I don't see any way that this series
does everything for a team.
Ends in 4 or 5 games. I think it's going to go the distance, 6 or 7.
I think the depth argument, again, is going to play into Chicago's favor. And I know I just said that they dispelled that rumor with Boston in the earlier series, but Boston did not have that depth in reality. They only had it on paper and in, I guess, the injury books.
Well, yeah, you look at Chicago's depth. They have guys, like, there's no one on that team that's really playing that poorly at the end of the bench. What's
the
big white Euro guy's name?
The only thing for Chicago is who are they supposed to...
Ashik?
Yeah, that's him.
Who guards Wade in the final quarter? Because they like to bring Korver in, right, in the fourth? And you can't have Korver guard him.
No.
So what do you think the solution kind of is? Is it...
It's got to be D-Rose.
You got to keep letting D-Rose run it. Yeah, that's... Poor Dwayne Wade, though, running after Derrick Rose all night on both ends. Ugh.
Oh, hey, it's what you signed up for, buddy. Yeah,
it is, but
you put Ronnie Brewer in on for shifts.
Yeah,
if you
Ronnie Brewer
to.
Will end up getting some time on D Wade, but I said they need Korver on the floor. He's the guy that opens up the floor for them.
He's great for
Derrick
spacing.
Rose is the only guy in the offense that can create his own shot, and Kyle Korver is one of the only guys that can knock down his open shot.
Presumably, the only weakness in the Chicago team is that two guard position, but when you have a rotating door almost where you can bring in what you need at that point, Ronnie Brewer, we've discussed this, is a great defensive player.
He is. He's fantastic.
I'm not quite sure what Keith Bogans does for you, but Kyle Korver with his shot is definitely an asset. You can play C.J. Watson alongside Derrick Rose if you have
to.
C.J. is
another guy that surprises.
Yeah, it's not a spectacular situation there that they have at the two guard. That's by no means their strength. That's definitely where they have to focus going forward if they can improve that position in the offseason. But there are teams that are much worse off at their weakest position than the Bulls are at that two-guard position. Try Miami at center or at point guard.
Yeah, that platoon system seems to work a little bit for them. I think, again, and if you want to look at the flip side of the coin, which is Miami's advantage, is that they just played a Tom Thibodeau defense. They just attacked it over 5 games, and they were highly successful. That's what the Celtics' defense is very, very much based in what is exactly the defense for the Chicago Bulls right now.
A proven defense.
I think that what you need to just look at a little bit there when maybe guys like me are jumping the gun and saying Chicago in 5-6 is that Miami might, again, be able to just come back on this D next game and absolutely obliterate them like we've seen.
We saw this from the Heat all season long. And that's what happens when you have so much invested in a small number of players on your team. You either come out like gangbusters and you destroy teams, which is what they did on many occasions throughout the season, or you come out and you're flat and you put up 82 points like they put up in game one. Everything needs to come together for this team to win, unfortunately. Yeah, they have two superstar players and Chris Bosh. I love how I keep throwing Chris Bosh in there like that asterisk.
Yeah. And
but you need two out of those three players to be spectacular. It's not enough. I don't think it's enough for LeBron James to drop 30 points if the other two aren't playing up to snuff. It's not.
Because you're not going to get any bench contribution.
Not now.
I can't see Dwayne Wade mailing in an entire Chicago Bulls series. I'm just sorry. I just don't see it. I see Dwayne being the big guy in here. Like, LeBron has obviously established that this is his team, it seems.
Mm-hmm.
But I think D. Wade, look out for him this series. He's gonna keep trying to pull down those big numbers in big hometown, Chai City Mang. So, that being said, though, can we get a little bit of Chai City rap? We'll give Common, Chai City, right here.
Thought they lost me. I'm back like a chiropractor with B-boy survival rap. It ain't 94, Joe. We can't go back. The game need a makeover. My man retired. I'ma take over. Tell these halftime niggas breaks over. I'm raw hustlers. Get your bacon soda. Too many rape the culture. Leave rappers with careers and they faith over. It's a war going on. You can't fake being a soldier in the basement. Listening to tapes are ultra magnetic to the fact I'm Messiah's black. I turn the TV down.
rim. Surprise niggas ain't become tires on the street. You turn cold and then go screech. I tell them fuck them like I do the police. The beast
is running rampant. Thank you, Common. Thank you, Common. We're back. Back with some full court press action. And now to do a little bit of a segment that everybody loves, 24 second shot clock. I'm going to give 24 seconds to my mans on my left and my right, and they're going to try to answer some questions for me. And as always, I'm going to have the overarching decision. Or overarching? What is it? Arching? Arcing?
I think it's arcing.
Yeah, arcing. Okay, we'll go with that. All right, so...
I'm an English major. I have no idea.
Yeah, you have no idea.
We both are, and we have no idea.
So the greatest living coach just called it quits. Phil Jackson has announced his retirement in the LA Lakers. Is this it for Phil, or will we see him somewhere else? And this week, we'll start with Josh Lewenberg. Let's go, Josh.
This is it for Phil. He has nothing left to prove. His career has been fantastic with the Bulls, with the Lakers. The legacy that he leaves behind is a great one. It's unfortunate that he went out like this, but I think it's more likely that he's done after going out like this than had he won again. Then I think there would be an idea that maybe he should defend the title once again. He done.
What up with you, Matty Hayes? What are you feeling?
I have to agree with Josh Lewenberg. Randy Couture took a kick to the face. Phil Jackson got swept in four games. Both Hall of Famers and legends, and both are done, and you'll never see them again.
So
nothing left to prove.
Nobody thinks it. Nobody thinks a little bit maybe New York situation that's opening.
No, I don't think there's any reason for him to do that.
No, see, for me, I'm gonna say this much. I think Phil hasn't ruled it out completely. That's. I think that there's a slight return. If he goes anywhere, it's going to be New York. But I think that he's keeping the door open. That's why he's not saying anything definitively, although having all four of his kids there like it was the Last Supper for that final game wasn't exactly encouraging for the other argument.
These days, it's tough to say that anyone's gone for good. It seems like just when you think Brett Favre is retired for the eighth time.
Brett Favre doesn't count.
Here he comes again.
Brett Favre is his own kind of monster.
Lance Armstrong won't be on a bike again. Oh, here he goes.
Yeah, oh, that's true. All right, next question. So, bigger role player beast thus far in the NBA playoffs? One in the West, one in the East. I give you Mr. Nick Collison, the Kansas Jayhawk, on one, or the USC Trojan, Taj Gibson of the Chicago Bulls now, on the other, and this time, Matty Hayes. Who do you got?
Not to discredit Nick Collison, whom I think is doing a great job, but Taj Gibson is by far the better of the two, and if you need any proof of that, ask Dwayne Wade about Game 1. Enough said.
Not even going to use the time, Josh.
I'm going to need the time because I don't see the question as which one is the more talented player. I'm taking this question as which one has been the most valuable. And Taj Gibson's dunks are fantastic. But Nick Collison, he's been in the league a while. He's underwhelmed for much of his career. But his defense, his rebounding, the intangibles that he provides to that OKC team coming off the bench and backing up some big front court players that are in OKC, he's been more valuable.
Yeah, I'm going to go with Collison, too. I think Collison's been a beast, and that kills me because, obviously, my affinity for OKC is not very high. But if you look at it, who's the one guy that's really actually was stopping Zach Randolph? Was Nick Collison.
Slowing him down, if nothing else.
Slowing him down, but this was in one-on-one situations. All of a sudden, I'm seeing Nick Collison match
most
up against
underrated defensive player in the
NBA. Definitely put a lot of faith in him.
You look at that. Everybody talked about the importance of getting Perkins for them. It's like, wow, the importance for them is having Nick Collison healthy for the rest of these playoffs. I'll tell you that much in terms of front court depth. It allows Perkins to get in a little bit of foul trouble, Ibaka maybe even. I love Collison these playoffs.
We've seen them go away a little bit from Ibaka because of how strong Collison has played defensively. He's been an anchor for them.
Yeah, he's been incredible. All right, let's go to another little hotly contested debate between two players. Let's go back to Josh. Pick your Gasol.
I'm not going to get carried away by one playoff series or two playoff series. Marcus Gasol is a fantastic player, and I think he's a free agent this summer, if I'm not mistaken. So if you're Brian Colangelo, go after Marcus Gasol. But Pau is still the better player. He is still, in my mind, the best power forward in the game. And he had a terrible playoffs. He had a terrible postseason. I expect him to come back strong next year. Pau, pau, pau.
Better than Zach. Okay.
Pau, 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 pau.
Over to you, Matty Boy. What do you got?
Pick Mike Gasol. I'll take Pau just because of his all-around offensive skill set is really impressive to me. I think he's the most impressive post player on the planet, really, with what he can do, with how he can dribble the ball, shoot the ball, pass the ball. He didn't play well in the playoffs, given, but I'll still take Pau over Mark.
Pau, pau, pau.
Pau, pau.
Matty, agreeing with Josh a lot today and not using all the time.
It only takes good. Like 5 seconds to agree with
to
me.
Agree with you.
I'm just back from the Josh break. I'm a little slow.
All point.
Pow, pow,
fine,
pow.
I'll play devil's advocate. I like Mark. I do. I think Powell's kind of fallen a bit by the wayside. I thought these playoffs was, it's more, that's a funk right there what that man is in. And I think when you can't motivate Pau Gasol with the Zen master and Kobe Bryant screaming in your face, how else are you going to do it? I think Pau Gasol, we're going to see a little bit of a dip with this guy. And best power forward in the NBA over what we saw from Zach Randolph recently? No. Disagree.
We know that Giannis only evaluates athletes by what they've done in the last 2 weeks. Albert Pujols! Little cough there.
Traded for Albert Pujols.
Regardless. Yeah. You got to look at the big picture, man. Yeah. Pow, pow, pow.
Pow, pow, pow. Pow, pow, pow. Again, though, I'm going with the younger, crazier looking. Better beard, too. Like, well,
way better beard. Beard. If you're going on beards, it's not even close.
Beard is no contest, Marc Gasol. So.
Some say he's the second coming of
Mark's
Gasol.
A way better looking Gasol.
Some say. All right, well, let's stick with the Lakers a little bit. Who needs more of a rebuild, Lakers or Celtics? I know we'll get something for this. Let's go. Matty Hayes.
Oh, wow. The Lakers need a coach. The Celtics need new players.
Yeah, Brian Shaw.
So I think I'd say the Celtics are in more need of a rebuild. I really do. I just don't think that Garnett's got it for many more years. Rondo, his season wasn't even that great, but I really think they have to look at what they were doing with that Jeff Green trade. It still didn't really work out. And Shaq and Jermaine O'Neal, they need to find Band-Aids for that.
Joshy?
I'm not going to oppose Matt after he's been so kind to me of late.
Nice
so,
of you.
Yeah, the Lakers are far from done. Kobe Bryant, he's only 32. It's an old 32 because of the mileage on those legs, but he still has a lot of domination left in him. And that team is still very talented, whereas the Boston team, the depth has been depleted a little bit. The Kendrick Perkins trade hurt them, and they're getting older. They are getting older. They got a great coach still, but it's time for them to rebuild, especially if there's a lockout coming up. The clock is ticking on them.
LA needs to rebuild more. I'll tell you why. Kobe is aging, 32. He is the oldest 32-year-old maybe in the history of man. This guy has tread on the tires. And if you saw that Dallas series, Kobe couldn't will them out of anything for the first time ever. The guy has peaked. And I know this has been said before, but it is true. And it has come full circle. Kobe Bryant is not the player that he used to be, and he never will be again in his career. Kobe is terrific. He still will have great years. He's an uber competitor, but you're looking at something similar to Kevin Garnett. Kevin Garnett in Boston, you're right, terrific player, terrific competitor. The guy eats, sleeps, and lives basketball in the offseason. That's all he does. The thing is, though, is eventually your body gives out on you and you don't have anything more to give. And I just think that what Kobe offers, he's going to be the kind of guy that he's the last guy to realize that his skill set is gone. He will keep doing the things that Kobe has always done, and he will hurt that Lakers team. Whereas with the Celtics,
I admire that about him. He's not going to admit defeat, and he shouldn't admit defeat.
Except for it is going to come at the cost of that
I still think
Lakers
he has
team.
A little bit left. Those dunks I saw him throw down early in the playoffs.
I think Ron Artest's career is done.
I think that's true.
I think that Pau Gasol is on the decline. I know it was just one series. They just lost the greatest coach right now in basketball. And I think that Andrew Bynum is a trade piece along with Lamar Odom for Dwight Howard next season.
Okay, this is no 24-second shot clock because this is way too... I'm not suggesting going to the next thing. I'm suggesting staying on this for more than 24 seconds because this is too good. This is too good at this point. I couldn't disagree more because coaching-wise, losing Phil Hurts, they're going to get somebody else that's going to come highly recommended by the players on that squad, by Kobe Bryant specifically. And the difference between next year and this year is going to be they're going to be hungry next year, whereas they were complacent this year. Kobe Bryant did not lose them that series. He didn't win it. He didn't win it for them.
Tell me that he has not lost a drastic step in
your
eyes.
Well, he's not.
Drastic?
Yes, drastic. To the Kobe Bryant that you saw 3 years ago.
Is he at his best? Absolutely not.
Of course not.
Absolutely not. But he's not going to lose them a series. Is he going to win them single-handedly series like he used to be able to do? I don't know about that. But it's the front court that has them fishing right now.
Oh, yeah.
Not Kobe Bryant.
But Kobe's still going to put up...
Kobe Bryant still averaged 22 points a game in the playoffs. That's not Kobe-like, but it didn't lose them the series.
It's nowhere near Kobe-like.
No, it's not.
It's nowhere near Kobe-like. And Kobe, like I said...
But that front court was pitiful. It was that front court.
Kobe got outplayed by Jason Terry, okay? Kobe Bryant got absolutely outplayed by Jason Terry. It wasn't even close. He was decimated by him. If for anyone in their right mind to think that, first of all, Kobe Bryant was extremely motivated. He was not complacent. He wants to pass MJ for rings. He posted immediately afterwards as a quote when they lost that game that this was a wasted year. a wasted year. That nothing meant anything to him this year. It was Phil Jackson's last year as the coach of the Lakers, and Kobe calls it a waste.
I like it.
A waste of a season.
I like it.
Yeah, I do.
It
like
absolutely
the fire.
Was a waste
I like
of the
fire.
Season.
I'm
and
just, no, but that's what I'm saying is I do not believe that Kobe Bryant is complacent in the slightest. I think he wants to surpass MJ for the rings. He wanted to get Phil the third three-peat of his career, which would have been fantastic and never would be maybe surmounted again. I just think that complacency was not it. I saw something for the first time ever, which was that Phil Jackson's players quit. They quit in the end of
those
games.
Not about Kobe Bryant. You're right. Maybe Kobe Bryant wasn't complacent, but the rest of that roster was. And Kobe Bryant, whether he is or he isn't at the top of his game, he could never win on his own. If he could, then that team directly after Shaq left would have been more successful than it was, but they weren't. He needs guys like Powell. He needs guys like Bynum and Ron Artest to be at their absolute hungriest. And the bottom line is they weren't this year, and they need to be. They absolutely need to be. Whether they will or they won't next year, who knows? But it's not on Kobe Bryant. It can't be on Kobe Bryant. It has to be on this team. It has to be on the organization to rebuild, to add pieces, to make sure that they are not complacent next year. Because if they are, they're going to suffer the same fate, if not worse, than this year.
I don't know. I think, like we mentioned, this has been the theme that's getting overused in the NBA right now, but changing of the guard. And I think that LA needs to bring in Dwight Howard or some other kind of superstar in order to have continued success.
Look at the four teams that are alive right now. What do you notice? Dallas? Hungry.
Very hungry.
OKC? Hungry. Chicago? Hungry. Miami? Hungry. The Lakers? Didn't give a shit.
I don't buy it, though.
They did.
I don't buy it.
They did to an extent, obviously. They don't. They weren't trying to lose.
I see what you're saying, Josh.
I don't.
They were trying not to lose.
Every team is just as hungry.
Like, they were trying not to lose.
I don't see how a Oklahoma City team that has pretty much no pressure on them to make a finals feels as much as the team that's got Phil Jackson in his last season in terms of. I don't buy the argument.
Because it's not about media pressure for OKC. It's about the pressure they put on themselves. And I don't know that anyone is hungrier right now
than Kobe Bryant, who wanted more rings than Michael Jordan?
Than Kevin Durant.
Oh, no. First of all, a guy that's hungrier than Kevin Durant is Dirk Nowitzki. Dirk Nowitzki says
that
he
too.
Has nightmares
I would
about
say
the
LeBron
Miami
James.
Season still. No. Dirk has no ring after getting it cheated from him in a series with Miami.
I still think LeBron James, he doesn't get any hungrier than him. He tarnished his entire
reputation
for everything to try and win this title.
So what? He has time. He has a window. Dirk Nowitzki's window is rapidly closing. You talk about guys, he's drafted in the same... He was drafted in the same year Robert Tractor Trailer was, who just died.
I know, they traded him.
So I think the window on said 20... Or
that trade worked out pretty well for
25?
Them.
Yeah, I said that the other day. He was way offside. Way offside.
Actually, Dallas ended up with Steve Nash because of that, too. A lot of people don't know that, but that ended up being Dirk and Steve, not just Dirk. Anyways, moving along, let's get to our final shot clock question, which is...
We're not done the shot clock?
No, give me one more shot clock. Give me one more. Right. I want to know, because we talked a lot about Zen Master. Now I want to know, who's the best coach available? Give it to me, Maddie. Who do we need? We got I guess, Adelman stepping down in Houston.
We've got
no coach in now Golden State. Those teams need clubs. Are they those clubs need coaches?
Realistically, I definitely look at Adelman going to L.A. I think he's probably the best option to replace the Zen Master. I don't think anybody's going to replace Phil right away.
Kobe wants Brian Shaw.
Well, Kobe might get Brian Shaw, too, but I still think Adelman will be best fit there. But, Josh, you can argue if you like.
Josh? Lots of names floating around. Kevin McHale is one that's been rumored to go to Houston. You got Dwayne Casey. We've heard rumblings of Sam Cassell's getting interviews. We all know Sam Mitchell is still out there. Mike Brown. Lawrence Frank might be the most intriguing name in my mind. He did a fantastic job as a very young coach with the Nets. And I think there's definitely an opportunity available for him, especially with that young Golden State team that's very, very intriguing.
I think anybody who coaches at Golden State's super lucky. They have some pieces there.
Well, you get to have some fun, that's for sure. Continue to play Nelly ball, but I think they would try to bring in a guy like Brown to kind of maybe change the philosophy up. I'm not too sure about that.
And what's Brown's philosophy? Just let one guy run the show and call the shots?
Yeah, that's pretty much it. It's going to need Monte to step it up if that's going to be
Monte will walk all over Mike Brown.
For sure.
That'd be good. All right, well, let's kick it over to another song, and then we'll come back and we will preview the Western Conference Final.
I'm looking forward to it.
This is Cool by Lupe Fiasco.
cool. Turn me up. Yeah. He came back in the same suit that he was buried in, similar to the one his grandfather was married in. Yes, he was still fresh to death, blamed two ear rings, a chain laying on his chest. He still had it cause they couldn't find it, and the bullets from his enemies sat like 2 inches behind it. Smelled a Hennessy from when his niggas got reminded, and poured out liquor in his memory, he didn't mind it. But he couldn't sip it fast enough, so the liquor was just filling the casket up. Floating down by his feet was the letter from his sister, second grade handwriting simply read, I miss ya. Suit jacket pocket held his baby daughter's picture, right next to it one of his men stuck a swisher. He had a notion as he lay there soaking, he saw that the latch was broken, he kicked his casket open and he, this life goes passing you by, it might go fast if you lie, you born, you live, then you die. Oh, 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 if life goes passing you by, don't cry, if you're breaking the rules, making your moves, yeah, paying your dues. Chasing the cool, not at all nervous as he dug to the surface. Tarnished gold chain is what he loosened up the earth with. He used his mouth as a shovel to try and hollow it, and when he couldn't dirt spit, he swallowed it, working like a reverse archaeologist, except his buried treasure was sunshine. So when some shine through a hole that he had drove, it reflected off the goal and almost made some blind. He grabbed onto some grass and climbed, pulled himself up out of his own grave and looked at the time on the watch that had stopped 6 months after the shots that had got him in the box, ringing Henny out his socks. Figured it was hours because he wasn't older. Used some flowers to brush the dirt up off his shoulders.
Great album.
Really, great album, Liquor. Really good album.
Now welcome
Food and Liquor
to Giannis's nightmare for the next 18 minutes of playoff discussion.
And that is, you could not be more correct. For those of you that do not know, the Oklahoma City Thunder are in the Western Conference Finals. And for those of us who used to cheer for the Seattle Supersonics,
a small part of you died.
Yes.
A large part.
A large part.
Died.
It continues to die on a daily basis. Worse and worse and worse it gets. I can't think of anything even close other than when the Nordiques.
You look like one of those cartoons with the storm cloud that just follows you around, like slightly above your head.
Do you remember when the Nordiques moved to Colorado and then they won a Stanley Cup the year after?
Mm-hmm.
And it was just ridiculous and how it ripped everyone in Quebec City's heart out. Yeah,
if you're
that's
not
how I feel.
If you're not involved in Seattle sports, it's hard not to love this Thunder team just based on their youth and how exciting they are. And you look at the fans in OKC and how great they are, but I can't imagine being in your shoes because
it's awful.
Yeah,
it's terrible.
There are no words. I can't describe it. How do you describe the situation if you're looking at this from a Seattle sports perspective?
Well, the one thing you look at it from a Seattle sports perspective is that you get 100% behind Mark Cuban and the Dallas Mavericks. First of all, when the Sonics were about to move, there was a vote between owners, which is that whenever a team relocates, you need to have majority decision from the owners in order for this to go by. Only two owners in the entire NBA refused to change their mind about letting Seattle move. And those two owners were Paul Allen, who's a Seattle native and owns the Portland Trailblazers, which was a no-brainer that he was going to vote that way. And then the other one was Mark Cuban, who believes that, and to this day, that Seattle is one of the better basketball markets, and that moving teams out of the Northwest for a Dust Bowl division, as he called it, to have an Oklahoma City there along the likes of all the Texas teams is just, it's ludicrous, and it still is to this day. The city of Seattle has been absolutely robbed, and this robbery continues. The only thing that you can kind of hope for is that Seattle gets a team back soon, and as an old Sonics fan, I just about was put to tears when I heard Sean Kemp's comments declining to go courtside at a Thunder game and be honored at a Thunder game. And he said, when he was interviewed by Slam, quote unquote, that he looked up in that stadium and he saw that they hang the Sonics banners in there. And he says, for him, it feels extremely weird and uncomfortable because all of that was accomplished in the city of Seattle. And for people to say that Oklahoma City had great fans, if people had any memory whatsoever, Key Arena during the 90s was the loudest arena, most rockin' arena in the NBA, without a doubt. No one would have even questioned you on that. So for these Oklahoma City fans to get this now, but anyways, going a little off track, Kemp turns it
Maddie,
down.
Maddie, do you want to touch this at all?
I'm just going to say, on the other side of the coin, I know Giannis is very passionate.
There is no other side of the coin.
Well, I look at Oklahoma City now and look at how their fans have rallied around that team.
Yeah.
I look at the players on that team
and
how
they
play.
They rallied around the New Orleans Hornets team that was there. Like, I don't
well,
care.
Well, so you can
they
see
don't
that
have anything there.
They're fantastic fans.
They're fantastic.
There's nothing there.
Fans.
That's why they go to the games.
Yeah.
They
well,
have
then
football.
That's why they have a franchise because
they lost
they have
Blake Griffin in college and now they have nothing. other than Oklahoma City games.
You're so biased on this.
Well, let's just see when they actually have a losing season or two, how that fan base quickly diminishes. Because there's a reason you don't have a franchise in Oklahoma City for this long.
Well, the here and now is the fans are
the only reason
really
you do
excited.
Have a franchise there is because a rich oil man happens to be best friends with David Stern, and he happens to be from Oklahoma City.
The Seattle situation is an unfortunate one, and I absolutely agree with you. The fact that there's no team in Seattle right now is a travesty.
It is.
But that is no reflection on what's going on right now in OKC, because those folks deserve a team. So let's talk about that, because before we go into this series that's upcoming, the Memphis-OKC series, whether or not people thought it would be fantastic, it turned out to be one of the greatest, not only series, but one of the greatest stories.
And I think
it's set
a preview for years and years to come. I really do. If they can maintain, if these two teams can keep those cores together, both cores are very young, very talented,
concerned,
and ready to go.
I'm concerned for Memphis for a few reasons.
Chris Wallace?
First of all, we know that they've struggled in the past to hang on to talent. And more specifically, the last time that we saw Memphis make a run like this, when they had Pau Gasol, when they surround them with the likes of Shane Battier.
They never made a run like this, though, because they never won a playoff series. Swift.
That's true. That's true. But they broke into the playoffs. They look like a very, very deep, very all-around talented team. And they just fell apart so quickly, and the organization did nothing to cling on to that. Instead, they moved on so quickly.
But
they
I
got
don't
rid of
think
Powell.
You'll see that this time.
I hope not.
That's what I'm worried about this time, because they do have so many small parts. They don't have those big stars that they it can fall apart on you.
It could fall apart.
But everyone's under contract except Gasol. They literally have their entire team. They've got Shane Battier. He's an unrestricted free agent, and they have Gasol. Those are the only two guys they need to re-sign. Tony Allen is under contract for like the next 3 years. So is Zach Randolph. They just re-upped with him for a massive new deal.
Oh, they shocked the world when they threw money at Rudy Gay, because
exactly.
I didn't think they were going to.
And that
so.
Turned out to be a fantastic move. They didn't end up trading OJ Mayo, which actually in turn, that mistake
worked
out
really
massively
well, yeah.
for them in terms of getting this far. I know OJ...
I still hate him as an NBA player, but
you still can't. You got to think though. He was one of the only guys that could make a three in that series, in that OKC series.
Oh well, they
when
needed
they
him
going,
without
yeah,
Rudy
was,
Gay, without their leading yeah. scorer.
I think next year you have a little bit of wiggle room to maybe move an OJ Mayo. I don't think he's one of the key pieces we discussed here, but I think going forward, if you have a core of Tony Allen, Shane Battier, Zach Randolph, Marcus Saul, and Mike Conley again, who stepped up and impressed. I know he had some off games. But wow, I really like Sam Young is there.
I'm not even going to try to look into the future at this point rather than live in the now. And I'll just say that this is why I think we and lots of people love sports, because of teams like Memphis that aren't part of the script, aren't part of this so-called plan that the league has, that the media has, to anoint teams like the Lakers or like the Spurs, who had a fantastic season, into the second round, into the third round. Here's a team that no one expected to go this far. Here's a team that was missing their so-called most talented player, who now might not actually be their most talented player. But it was a fantastic story, and in the end, the team with more talent ended up winning out, which tends to happen in a 7-game series, especially one that went as long as this one with the overtimes, the triple overtime game. The young Memphis team was tired. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, tired and inexperienced.
Yeah.
They've never been through anything like that.
I felt the Memphis team was older, though, and that's what hindered them after coming. I thought the big swing was that triple overtime game. Is whoever
that
won that triple OT,
team.
Marc Gasol and Zach Randolph, who have been good for a while under the radar because they don't get a lot of pub in Memphis, they logged minutes in this series
gassed.
That they've never been asked to log before. And yeah, it absolutely showed. But good on both of them. I mean, what a front court this is. Marc Gasol, we just talked about him. And Zach Randolph.
And Arthur and Young coming in, filling nicely up there too. They do a great job, Memphis. I like them. Chris Wallace, again, gets a year where he is not one of the most disrespected GMs in NBA basketball. It's unbelievable.
Poor guy.
The guy, since acquiring the job, has been just absolutely brutalized year after year. I guess we kind of have to go here with this one, though. Does the Wallace-Pau trade kind of at all get a little better, despite the fact that the Lakers...
Still ludicrous. It's better, but...
3 straight finals appearances and 2 championships.
Yeah, it's better.
It's better.
It's
yeah,
still stupid.
That's the only way to anoint that, right? Better. Especially considering if Mark walks this year. Although I think he's restricted.
Getting 25% on a test is better than getting 20.
That's true.
So it's still terrible.
So Oklahoma City moves on.
So Oklahoma
Kevin Durant made a statement in Game 7 because he had a rough Game 6, 11-point performance, but he was what was advertised when you talk about Kevin Durant, this superstar player, 39 points, 13 for 25. Is he the best player in this series going forward, or are you leaning towards Dirk and the Mavs?
I think he's the best player in the NBA. I think he's the best scorer in the NBA, let's put it that way. But I just do not see, and this is without bias, and I will always keep my bias free from this show.
Always.
And that is that I don't believe that this Dallas Mavericks team can be beaten right now. I think the layoff is actually going to help them. Despite OKC's youth, I think that again, we talk about letdown and coming through and peaking. I think them making the Western Conference Finals is enough for them right now. I'm not saying that teams don't want to win. I'm not saying that the willpower goes away a little bit. I just think that a little bit comes off. And I think that after having that long series, coming into a well-rested Dallas team that has the Dallas team, to put it on the flip side, I think their youngest player, or they only have two players under the age of 30 on their team. And one of them is Tyson Chandler, and he's 29 or 28 years old. They are by no means a youthful team. There is a sense of urgency in Dallas right now, way, way beyond compare of an expansion franchise that is
in an
just
oddly
moved to
quiet Mark Cuban, which I kind
of
like.
It's not oddly quiet. It's that he's going to erupt at one of these points.
Oh, he is going to freak out.
He doesn't want to get caught in a situation. Right? I was a little surprised he didn't. And again, too, you need to know that I think he showed a little bit of class. He knew Phil was going out on top.
He and Phil
have a rivalry, the two of them. They've taken shots back at one another, but I think when it came down to it, Mark realized that this is the greatest coach in NBA, possibly NBA history, other than maybe Red Auerbach. So let him have his moment and don't make it about you. And even though by being silent, I think Mark Cuban draws.
I find it kind of funny that, yeah, with Mark Cuban being so silent, I found myself cheering for Dallas more.
Like, oh, no.
I'm so used to Mark
Cuban.
Oh,
Mark Cuban's a genius and he's hilarious. Why would you want him to be quiet? Please. Please, Mark Cuban, start talking. We miss you. Like, no, I don't know. Josh, don't you miss Mark Cuban? Don't you want to hear from Mark Cuban?
But that's the thing, the anticipation of what he's going to do or what he's going to say. I like the little bit of lull.
I love to hate Mark Cuban. He's a douchebag. Let's be honest. He's a douchebag. I hope he's not listening to this show because I'm screwed if he is.
Friend to the show, Mark Cuban.
He's a douchebag.
I love you, Mark Cuban.
I love to hate him. He's a douchebag. But he's the NBA's douchebag, and they need him, and we need him.
I think David Stern is the NBA's douchebag.
Regardless. Yep. Let me go on my rant about this series here.
Rant on, if
I may.
If you will.
If I will. These two teams, and again, you may disagree with this. You may agree with this. I hope you agree with this.
We'll see.
The Thunder and the Mavs are the two most talented teams in the NBA. Lakers aside, they're out. They didn't look good in the playoffs. They're in disarray. You have three very talented players in Miami, but this OKC team with Kendrick Perkins, with Ibaka, with their two superstars in Westbrook and Durant.
James Harden emerging.
James Harden. Yep. We don't even need to mention the type of talent and the type of depth that Dallas has. These are the most talented teams, all-around teams in the NBA, and I think that's going to show in this series. Whether or not OKC is tired after their seven-game battle with Memphis, I don't know. Durant, like I said, there was so much on the line in that Game 7. The spotlight was on him. He responded. How about Russell Westbrook?
Becoming an actual point guard?
That's what I was about to say. Did a lot of things.
Yeah, finally.
Did a lot of things that were out of character of Russell Westbrook in the first couple rounds. It almost looked at times like he was trying to steal the spotlight.
Yeah, he was trying to outshine Kevin Durant.
From Kevin Durant. But that final game, that triple-double, 14 assists, that was a Rajon Rondo type of performance.
That was
great. That's his role. That's where he belongs. Can he do other things? Can he step up when Durant isn't playing well? Absolutely. But this is where he belongs. So that team is going to be a force to be reckoned with going forward for many years to come. As for the Dallas Mavericks, you mentioned it. They're not as young as people think they are. People think that they're a young team. Sometimes
They're ancient.
They're ancient. They're an older team, I guess, at one point when they had
Leia and Tyson Chandler. Those are the two only players on the roster under 30 years old.
The guys on the team, they have Sean Marion, Dirk Nowitzki. Jason Kidd.
Doesn't it seem like they're a younger team, though, just based on the way that they play?
Yes, they do.
Yet
Jason Kidd, throughout the playoffs, has found the fountain of youth.
They're finding the fountain of youth right now. And we've said this before when they made their run last time, but this could be their year. And
I really do think it is.
And if are the two most talented teams in the NBA, then I'm going to have to go out on a limb and say that Dallas is the most talented team in the NBA. Caron Butler apparently may or may not be making his return in this series. If not, he could very well make his debut in the finals if they make it that far.
Because he was great before he went out.
Yeah, and is he going to play a big role? Probably not.
Probably not. No.
But he's yet another piece to this arsenal that goes so, so deep into this bench where they can bring in a Deshaun Stevenson to play some defense. They have Corey Brewer, who's a defensive threat as well.
Way to go, New York.
You got athleticism with Sean Marion. You got shooting with Peja. You can go in so many directions. You can play Barea and Kidd together. There's so many different combinations that this team can throw at you. Tyson Chandler, we've talked on the show about what he's done for this team defensively and how he's changed the culture in Dallas. Mavs in seven.
Do you think that the Knicks maybe regretted a little bit of Corey Brewer? They could have used him when they were getting absolutely trampled. And they couldn't
stop
anybody.
I think there's more than one team that wished they had Corey Brewer.
New York. Wow, yeah. How do you not find a place for Corey Brewer? I just,
I remember myself saying that 100 times.
Anyway, I totally agree, though, with what Josh just said. I think that these are the two more talented teams. I think Chicago, again, comes into that realm. We mentioned
They're close.
Them earlier. I think that the difference between maybe Chicago and these two teams is that they really do only have Derrick Rose that can create his own shot.
Yep.
At least Dallas has two. At least OKC has two. But if it comes down to it, if somebody pulls the Jordan rules on Derrick Rose over here, something might go down. I don't know what's... And for those of you that don't know, the Jordan rules was something designed by the Pistons to eliminate Michael Jordan's effectiveness as a one player. I think Derrick Rose is going to take some of that brunt this series anyways. Miami's really going to hound him. But yeah, wow. Wow, do we also these two series
you
are
fantastic.
You got
a pick for that Western Conference one, Giannis?
Do I have a pick?
Yeah.
I think that I'm cheering for Dallas, and I do believe Dallas will win. Like
how
I said,
games?
I think this sense of urgency. I think it'll be a seven-game series, like Josh said. I'm going with that. I don't see how this isn't a seven-game series.
Dallas has had a lot of time to sit and rest, but this is a young team. This isn't the Boston Celtics, who have just freshly come out of a seven-game series. Kevin Durant and Russell Westbrook are at the stage in their career where I think they can handle these type of minutes. Will it come back to bite them in the ass? Quite possibly.
I think the big keys for the Thunder are threefold, and that's one, Russell Westbrook has to play like he did last night, in the sense that he can't be the guy snaking final possession shots from Kevin Durant, chucking up contested three-pointers when they haven't had any ball movement. He needs to be that pass-first mentality, trying to find Kevin. And Kevin, to be fair to Russell Westbrook, he took a lot of flack for Kevin Durant's inability to get open in that last series. Like, Shane Battier was blanketing him, not letting Kevin Durant come off the screens.
Mm-hmm.
That being said, Russell has to be more like he was. Number two is that James Harden needs to be that third scorer for the Thunder. If they are going to win and they're going to beat Dallas, then they're going to not only need to match the Jason Terry-Dirk Nowitzki combination, but surpass it with that third option. And I think that James Harden is that guy. And then number three is then, of course, limiting Dirk Nowitzki. You can't let this guy absolutely demolish you like he's been killing other teams. Because
who do you put
so
on
far,
him?
Who do you put on him?
Yeah.
Serge, without question.
That's who I would put on him, just asking.
You can Collison.
Ibaka, Collison, and not really so much Perkins because he won't be playing off the low block very much.
Perkins can battle Tyson Chandler till the cows come home.
Chandler and Perkins, yeah. They'll
camels.
Be going. The camels?
Till the cows come home.
Oh, I heard camels.
I heard camels, too. We're going to have to listen to tape on that one. That's going definitely back.
I kind of like it.
Anyways, I'm taking OKC in seven.
Okay.
Although I do want Dallas to
win. So you want me to jump off our balcony is what you want.
Well, it's not that high of a balcony. We're on the second floor.
In that case, I'm switching my vote to OKC. They could win it. They could.
Oh, no
and
doubt they could.
We've mentioned so many keys. Russell Westbrook has to know his role. Why? Because I can assure you, Jason Kidd on the other side will know his role.
I'll tell you this much. If the Thunder do manage to meet Dallas, then you know there is no basketball god. And if there is, then he is the cruelest god that ever existed. A tortured fan base like Dallas, who was robbed of an NBA championship, going up against an expansion franchise that came into existence no more than 3 years ago. And then what? They're going to beat them in and get into the finals and leave Dallas by the wayside and Dirk Nowitzki's career without a ring?
If it's a Miami-OKC final, are you going to let me watch it?
Yeah, of course. I'd love to watch that. I'd love to watch Kevin Durant go against LeBron James.
Who would you cheer for?
Oh, I would cheer for Miami.
We're short on time, and this is actually a good question to go out on. Your ideal NBA Finals for media purposes. So for the storyline, for...
Oh, it's Dallas-Miami, without a doubt.
Yeah,
it's
rematch.
It's not even close. It's like
is it a rematch, though?
Yeah, it is. Well, it's huge.
Dirk
it's
versus
Miami
versus Wade.
Yeah.
But these teams have changed quite a bit.
No,
at least Miami
changed,
has.
But you still have Dirk. You have the two most important guys in that relationship, and one is Dirk Nowitzki, and the other guy is Mark Cuban. And so that you still have those two guys, and I don't mean to take away from Dwayne Wade, but he already had his superhero moment where he won an NBA championship for a team. And I think that, yeah, I think the, again, it would come down to that sense of urgency thing again, where you have the Heat just beginning their prowess as an NBA dynasty, perhaps, whereas Dallas is coming off the end of the greatest European player to ever play the game. Who, and I think that's pretty universal. We talked about Sabonis last time.
All he needs is a ring now.
All he needs is that ring, and that's what he has lamented about throughout his career, and that is he's a winner, Dirk Nowitzki. And I remember one of my most vivid memories of him as a player was when the Suns beat them, when the Suns beat the Mavericks about 3 years ago in the NBA playoffs, 4 years ago, Steve Nash hit a three in overtime for them to win the game. And Dirk Nowitzki, the guy looked like he was going to fall apart and cry into tears. He was screaming at teammates at first, and then you could just see this wave of emotion just come over him, which was that he was completely and totally lost, and he could not understand or fathom why he, at this point in his career, had still not gotten to that point. And now he's still there, and he still wants it. And I guarantee you that Dirk Nowitzki is going to, he's going to put it all out there. You're going to see 110%.
There are certain players that never win that in my books and in the mind of the NBA community are still winners. Charles Barkley never won, but is a winner.
Dirk Nowitzki is definitely one of those characters.
Dirk, no matter what happens here, is a winning type of player, a winning caliber player, mm-hmm. and you never know. We've talked about it. This is a talented team.
Yeah.
The NBA, I agree with you, probably wants to see a Miami Dallas final.
I don't think they'd be too opposed. I wouldn't mind Kevin Durant versus LeBron James or
I wouldn't mind. I wouldn't mind a Chicago Dallas.
I think they're very set.
The Chicago OKC wouldn't even be terrible.
Yeah, no,
you get point
guards. Wouldn't be terrible. I think that's what.
So either way, we're good.
The NBA lost Memphis and they lost Atlanta from the last round. And for them, when you look at it from the big picture aspect and what appeals to the largest fan base, then, yeah, that watching Memphis and Atlanta lose, David Stern was probably doing jumping jacks.
So what is it? We just don't want to see Dallas-Chicago? Is that the only matchup I don't really want to see?
No, I'd like Dallas-Chicago.
But yeah, exactly. Like every single
yeah,
one of them.
Yeah, even that one's pretty good. You're right.
Dallas-Chicago would be phenomenal.
Oh, that's why we play the games.
Yeah, it would be terrific. So I guess what's coming up this week? We got a little bit of
Tomorrow.
Tomorrow night, draft lottery.
The NBA draft lottery.
Maybe wrap up just quickly. Tomorrow, the lottery balls fall. The Raptors have what percentage chance, Josh?
Not sure about the percentage chance. Like I know 12. They have the third highest chance.
Which is at roughly somewhere around 12%, I think. 12 to 15.
15.6.
15.6? Okay, yeah. It's somewhere in that range. The consensus here is Raptors need Kyrie Irving or they need nothing at all, correct?
Yes, but it's so tough to slot players into this draft. There's no consensus number one pick. It's hard to say where people are going to fall. So it's an interesting draft lottery in that we know which players the Raptors may benefit from more than others, but we don't know which pick they might need to get said player.
If Kyrie Irving goes early, though, what do the Raps do, really?
Well, and Josh brought up an interesting point that Chad Ford actually mentioned as well, which is that it's not the most top-heavy draft, but what you do have is you have a lot of talented players that are in this draft that are going to fill out two rounds of basketball. And for the first time in maybe a long time, you could actually see second-round players make an impact in the league. Not an impact like, you know the league. You know the type of impact I mean, which is nominal, but still making NBA rosters. I think you look at how far down this goes. Guys like Juwan Johnson and Isaiah Thomas. There's a lot of talent.
Yeah, I'm looking at a mock draft right now. None of those names are in the top 14.
Exactly. And those are sleep later picks. The two guys that, of course, we are going to be looking out for on this show are the two Canadian boys that have entered the draft and have declared. And one of them is projected to be a top 10 pick with Tristan Thompson. So very, very exciting for Canada. Of course, not the draft, just the draft lottery.
I don't think he should have declared.
Yeah.
I thought he should stick around in Texas.
No, that's a story for another day.
Yeah,
another day.
We'll leave that for another time. That being said, though, let's get out there and enjoy the sunshine. This is Atmosphere Sunshine. Thanks for tuning in with us this week, folks. We hope to see you soon.
Later.
Later.
Ain't no way to explain or say how painful the hangover was today. In front of the toilet, hands and knees, trying to breathe in between the dry heaves. My baby made me some coffee, afraid that if I drink some, it's probably coming right back out me. Couple of Advil, relax and chill, at a standstill with how bad I feel. I
think I need to smell fresh air. So I stepped out the back door and fell down the stairs. The sunlight hit me dead in the eye, like it's mad that I gave half the day to last night. My bad sight made me trip on my ass right into that patch of grass, like that's life. All of a sudden, I realized something. The weather is amazing, even the birds are bumping. Stood up and took a look and a breath, and there's that bike that I forgot that I possessed. Never really seen exercises, but I think something's telling me to ride that 10-speed. The brakes are broken, that's alright. The tires got air and the chain seems tight. Hopped on, it felt the summertime. It reminds me of one of them Moosob lines, like sunshine, sunshine is fine. I feel it in my skin, warming up my mind. Sometimes you gotta give in to win. I love the days when it shines. Whoa, let it shine. Sunshine, sunshine is fine. I feel it in my skin.